Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
So the Broncos schedule came out on Thursday, but an activity that we didn't take on. I'm curious to hear Stokes' view on this too. Maybe hear from him tomorrow. He will be back. He's not prancing around this time. He is doing dad stuff. Son graduating high school and got to do that stuff. So I'm glad he's not here today.
That is a legitimate excused absence.
Yes,
that one you don't miss those kind of things.
No, and he may be breaking the seal on that for this year. Like an excused absence.
Yeah.
A lot of absences.
Yeah. This was the first one that's excused.
Yeah. What's the best primetime game for the Broncos? And by the way, I am, in my own mind's eye, like Christmas Day against the Rams. That's put on Christmas Day against the Super Bowl champs because that's primetime.
Okay.
And I throw in Jacksonville in London, too, because it's a standalone game that the NFL world will be watching.
So when you're the only one on the schedule at that moment, it's a primetime game.
Yep.
That makes sense.
That doesn't have to be a certain part of day,
but if you're the only game to watch, the only NFL game, it's primetime.
And there's seven of those this year.
I can tell you what's number seven.
Jacksonville and London.
Yeah. That is not a sure win if that game was in Jacksonville. I think that's a 90% chance, 95% chance the Broncos win it. I think it's not called a coin flip, but it's probably 60% because just having to go to London makes it, who knows? Who knows what could happen? Jacksonville does it every year. I know it's a new coaching staff, but all their behind-the-scenes people got the drill done. It worries me a little bit, but that's number seven.
Thanks to our listeners in Wheat Ridge for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. What's number one?
Wow, okay. Well, I think...
And by the way, the fact that we can even go through this exercise and even agree or disagree or debate is a testament year over year to where we're at now.
You know what? I'm going to put number one. Well, hang on. Let's work backwards. Let's start eliminating them. I think at the Chargers on Monday Night Football is six. That's a good matchup. There's a lot of
it's a really good matchup.
There's a lot to like about that game, but it's Monday night. You know, I'm going to put that six. I think the Thursday night game here against Indy is five, and I would probably have had that much higher if that was like Sunday night football here. But a Thursday night game, you know, I'm not sure you're going to get Indy's best shot there. Probably don't even get Denver's best shot. It's a weird short week for both of them, but the team that had to travel. Putting that five. I'm over watching the Broncos and the Chiefs in primetime, so I'm putting that four.
You're over watching the Broncos and Chiefs in primetime.
I mean, they flexed Teddy Bridgewater into that slot for crying out loud.
I know, but this is just a totally new thing that we're undertaking here.
I know.
You're not anxious to see Russell Wilson versus Patrick Mahomes in primetime. Doesn't sound like
it. I am, but I've seen it. I've seen it before.
You haven't.
It's Fast and the Furious 10. I get it. Vin Diesel's going to slide the car around a
James,
corner. I
Russell
get it.
Wilson hasn't played a down of football for the Broncos yet.
There's always a new star in Fast and Furious.
So how can you say you've seen it? And it's not just a new star in Fast and Furious. It's a new Vin Diesel.
There's been no Vin Diesel. We've seen the poster. I've seen that movie poster before. So I'm putting that four. It's right in the middle of the pack.
All right.
We can't put it one. We've seen it before.
It's been like, nah.
You
haven't seen it before. You haven't seen Russell Wilson in a Broncos uniform going against Mahomes and the Chiefs in primetime.
I'm
going
to put number three. I think it's intriguing, San Francisco coming in here.
That's Sunday Night Football.
Yep, week three. I'm going to put that as number three. Kyle Shanahan coming in here. Especially if Jimmy Garoppolo's playing, that's a sneaky tough game.
It is.
So
I think it's going to be tough no matter what.
I think that has the potential to be a Super Bowl preview. Could you see the Niners in the Super Bowl? Sure. Could you see the Broncos in the Super Bowl? Sure. That has the potential to be a Super Bowl preview.
Okay.
I'm going to go number two, Christmas Day in L.A. against the defending Super Bowl champs. And come on, number one, first ever regular season game with Russell Wilson in a Broncos uniform. He's going back to Seattle. That in of itself
You've
would
seen
be
that
enough.
Movie before.
That in of itself would make it one. But it's Drew Locke on the other side. I mean, come on, the storylines for that. It would have been like if Peyton's first game was in Indy.
Right.
Going up against the guy who used to, you know, going up against Kyle Orton and the Colts.
We only really have two examples on Russell's level. Both examples are above Russell's level, and that's Peyton going back to Indianapolis.
Right.
That's all due respect to the dynamics here. That was bigger. That's bigger. And then Brady returning to Foxborough in a Bucs uniform.
That was bigger. But it wasn't their first game as a Buck and their first game as a Bronco.
You're right. That's another added layer.
So,
and look, I want to disagree with you here. And I actually probably do disagree with you with it being number one. But I do not disagree with the absolutely fascinating dynamics. One of the worst takes I've heard from Brandon Stokely, and there is a laundry list of them, but it was that Russell Wilson returning to Seattle doesn't do much for him. I'm like, how are you a football fan, and you have already a Hall of Famer? Like, if something tragic happened and Russell Wilson was never able to play again, he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
So, and there's, like, the more you would talk it out, there's no disagreeing. Dante said he disagreed. There's no disagreeing. We've never seen a start to a 10-year career like Wilson's, where the first losing season happened last year. The guy's played in multiple Super Bowls, won one, Pro Bowler 9 times. So, like, it's solidified for me. Outside of Manning going back to Indianapolis and Brady going back to Foxborough, the next greatest example in literally the history of the NFL is going to be Monday, September 12th.
Well, I think Stoke would have a better point if this was week 14, right? And you got to that game and,
sure.
I don't know, the Seahawks are 3-9,
sure,
or whatever. Like, you're kind of over it, right? Like, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But the Patriots were still good, and you know, Bill Belichick was still there, and they're still expected to be a contender when Brady went back. And the Colts had Andrew Luck when Manning went back, and they were, you know, hey, they had moved on to the next guy,
right?
Manning was visiting and, you know, coming up for a holiday, and she was with the new hubby, right? Like, that was what was going on there, so that added to the dynamics here. Week one makes this to where Seattle still thinks they're good. They still think Drew Lock could be the answer. This is going to be their Super Bowl. Everybody there that is going to be mad at Russell Wilson is still mad at him. As the year goes on and they realize, hey, maybe Russell had a point.
Yeah.
I think that starts to wane. But week one, that's going to be the most venom he could possibly face in Seattle.
Do you think he gets booed when he runs out for his first series?
Maybe. I don't think he gets booed in pregame introductions. I think he gets booed once the game starts. If I was a Seahawks fan, that's what I would do. I would stand up and give him a standing ovation when he got introduced with the offense, if that's who the Broncos choose to introduce that night. I'm going to honor you for your 10 years of service here, and I'm going to stand up and clap and yell and scream. And then when you run out there to take a snap as a member of the Denver Broncos, I'm going to boo. So I think that's what will happen. I think he will get booed. That's the opener. That's the game. If you only could pick one game to watch all year, it ain't going to be, hey,
no, but see,
Broncos Chiefs part 9 on Sunday Night Football.
I cannot believe the way that you are minimizing Russell Wilson versus Patrick Mahomes in primetime. It's actually unbelievable. It's actually unbelievable what you're doing right now.
I think my Fast and the Furious analogy is spot on. We've seen that movie.
We've seen the uniforms share the same field.
We kind of know that plot. We haven't seen Sleepless in Seattle. That was a groundbreaking film.
If the Broncos are going to be good as, by the way, we're about a half hour from giving our game one Avs prediction and series prediction. You're not going to want to miss that at 1:45. In the meantime, if the Broncos are going to be as good as everyone thinks they can be this season, they have to be the most improved team in the NFL in one department. Tell you what it is next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
If the Broncos are going to be as good as everyone thinks they can be this season, they have to be the most improved team in the NFL in one department. The Broncos want to win 11 games. How many games did you have the Broncos winning?
I have them 11-6.
Okay, same. If they're going to be 11-6 and they're going to win 2 out of every 3 games that they play, I think it's very reasonable to argue that they need to be the most improved team in the NFL in one department, considering where that department is trying to come from.
Okay, so you're talking phase of the ball, phase of the game. So defense, statistically, they may actually go down and still be a better defense.
Agreed. Right? Like, agreed.
They could give up more points per game, but they could actually make some plays happen and get the opposing team off the field and force some turnovers and I don't know, get a stop in the final 5 minutes of the game. So they could be better, and some analytical nerd will tell me they were worse, but anybody who watches the game would get like, yeah, they were better. They made plays happen. Offensively, Zach, they're going to have to be significantly better. I mean, they were brutal the last few years where it was, hey, if they get to 20 points, we're all celebrating. I don't know how many halftime shows I've done the last two seasons where they had 10 points or less at halftime, but the vast majority. So they got to be much better on offense, but they have been brutal. They have been the worst team in the league in recent years on special teams. And that has just been a total oversight with this organization, is how bad they've been on special teams. Tom McMahon keeping that job for multiple years.
Remarkable.
Was just a joke. And it was laughable things. We would see a big play by the other team every week, either a big return or a blocked kick or something. But we would also see things like 13 men on the field. Not 12.
Yeah.
13.
Yeah.
We would see the Raiders know the rule and pick up the ball at the 1 yard line on a punt that had been touched, pick it up and run for a touchdown because the Broncos thought the play was over. Like, again, things you
just
would
insane
see
stuff.
In a little league game that you would be shocked to see in a high school game. The Broncos were doing it at the professional level. So it ain't going to take much for them to be significantly better. It's not.
As bad as the Broncos have been on offense these last handful of years, they've never been dead last. They've never been dead last. They've been as bad as bottom five, but they've never been the worst offense in the NFL. The Broncos are definitively coming off a season where they were the worst special teams unit in the entire sport.
Yeah, both statistically and by the eye test.
Yes, yes. Dwayne Stukes is here to fix that. First year special teams coach. There's a little bit of something to this guy.
He's my favorite guy on the staff so far.
He is so likable and might be just what the Broncos need. Like in this department, a voice with authority that, unlike Tom McMahon, and I'm not saying you need to be able to play, had a playing career to coach. I think the examples on that are, you know, endless. But the fact that he scraped and clawed his way as a player and has that sort of experience and tone behind his voice, I think it's significant.
Yeah, I think he's a no-nonsense guy, which Brock Olivo and Tom McMahon both were. Boy, they were great sound bites. They would say something goofy and funny that would give shows like this things to play for years to come, which there's an entertainment value to that. But if you're trying to put together a good special teams unit week in and week out, I don't think that's the way to go about it. And there's an attention to detail. Like, to me, that's what special teams is really about.
100%, James.
It is just attention to detail. And again, when you have 13 guys on the field, that's not paying any attention to detail. When you don't know the rules, that's not paying attention to detail. When Deontay Spencer repeatedly brings a kick out from 4 yards deep in the end zone, gets to the 16, and it comes back to the 8 because of a penalty, that's not attention to detail. And think about teams that are historically good on special teams. Kansas City, New England, Baltimore in this conference. New England and Baltimore in particular, and John Harbaugh was a former special teams coordinator. They don't beat themselves in that phase. New England, try and come up with a game that they lost because of special teams gaffes. It just doesn't happen. That's because Bill Belichick and then by default his staff, pretty detail-oriented group. So I think that's the two things that Dwayne Stukes will bring. But man, just the way I could listen to his press conferences all day long. Love it.
And we used to want to listen to the other special teams coordinator's press conference for a totally different reason. So we could literally try to hear him say something crazy that we could repurpose for our own laughter.
It was comic relief.
This is the new special teams coordinator, Dwayne Stukes, talking about fighting for roster spots.
Back in those days when I played, and I'm not trying to sound real old, but I am 45, but we had to play special teams at Virginia, right? So I started on defense, but I wanted to help our team win. And the coach said, we want the best players on special teams as well as on offensive defense. So whatever it took to help the University of Virginia win games, I was willing to do. I had no problem doing that. So yes, my love for the special teams started there. But then once I got to the league and I wasn't a starter anymore, it was eye-opening, right? Because at college, everybody's telling you, oh, you're great at this. You're great. You're great. Then you get to the NFL and you have older vets that are telling you you're not as good as you think you are a rook, right? You have to earn your position. You have to earn your spot. And the only way I was going to earn a roster spot was playing special teams. I had a lot of talented safeties in front of me. So I was like, I want to make this team. I would do whatever it takes to make this team. And that's what I'm trying to instill in these guys too, especially the younger guys. You got to take advantage of the opportunities you're given and you got to take hold of that. If you get a shot to take a job from someone, you got to do it.
I mean, James, what's not to like?
Oh, just what he said, the way he says it, the content of it, he's spot on. And, you know, this franchise has maybe the best example of a guy making a roster because of a special teams play.
It's Terrell Davis.
Terrell
in Japan.
Davis. Yep. Terrell Davis in 1995. He's like sixth on the depth chart. He tried to go home from Tokyo because he was not happy with the way things were going, but because of the language barrier, couldn't book a flight. He winds up going out there and making a tackle on special teams. The rest is history. He's in Canton now. I think that they have the prime example of what special teams can do for a guy's career. But I also like the fact of it ain't just a way to make the roster. And special teams, to me, special teams the last 5 years has been for the guys that are 33 to 53 on the roster.
For sure.
And I don't get the sense that's the way it's going to be now. If you're a starter, that doesn't mean you don't play special teams. Other than probably Russell Wilson, I'm not sure who's exempt from at least having to participate in special teams now, which is how it ought to be. It ought to be, hey, you can come out here and run down and make a tackle on a punt or on a kickoff. You know, we used to see Champ Bailey be out there on special teams every once in a while. If it's good enough for Champ Bailey, why is it not good enough for Pat Surtain? You know, why is it not good enough for Justin Simmons? Have guys like that are out there because it's an important phase of the game.
You know, here I am sort of shaking my head with you.
You're questioning that.
And then you get to, yeah, Pat Surtain and Justin Simmons should be on special teams. And I'm like,
hey, man, you can get what you're saying.
No, you're right. You're right.
But it also sets a tone, right? Like if those guys play special teams, it sends the message that it's important much more than the head coach getting up there and telling you that it's important.
Yeah.
But those guys, they're smart. Like they can look out there and say, hey, these are, and I don't mean this as disparaging as it's going to sound, but these are all the interchangeable parts. That's not a very important phase of the game. If that's who's participating in it, that's the message that's being sent. And I think that's partially why this team has been so bad in that phase of the game.
All right. We are going to give our game one Avalanche prediction and series prediction here in just a couple minutes at 1:45. In the meantime, last night, the Rockies slipped to below 500 for the first time since opening day, but they suffered a bigger loss than what appeared on the scoreboard. Tell you what it is next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Last night, the Colorado Rockies slipped to below 500 for the first time since opening day. I feel like where we're at with this team, I feel like that actually made people happy. Do you agree?
I don't know if it made them happy. I think they were happier when we were all kind of getting to play along. When they were my Rockies, I was happier when they were my Rockies. We just knew that wasn't going to last. And sometimes when things just return to normal, it maybe doesn't make you happy, but it makes you feel like, okay, this is a world I understand. I can cope and live and survive in a world in which the Rockies are below 500 because that's where I'm used to living. Maybe not happy, but comfortable.
Yeah.
That would be the term I would
use. It's sort of like in Shawshank when his name gets out of prison.
We're all red.
No. Red. Red, but
and Brooks.
Brooks. Yeah. Brooks was here. Yeah. But he's like, I don't know what to do. I kind of like the coziness of my cell.
We've been institutionalized.
That's right.
When it comes to the Rockies.
That's right.
We are quite comfortable when they're sub 500.
Oh, my gosh. I said going to the break, they suffered a bigger loss than what was actually on the scoreboard. You lose a game, one singular game in baseball, it's less than 1% of your schedule. You lose one of your starting pitchers, that's a bigger deal. Antonio Senzatella looks like he's going to be headed in the IL. Tightness after just two innings, obviously not ideal. And you and I agreed a little bit earlier in the show, this starting pitching rotation is like a C. Like you're going to grade them. They're about a C. Chad Kuhl's been like your best pitcher, and he's sort of come back down to earth here recently.
Ramon Marquez has been a major
disappointment. Doctor. Now, that's a totally different one because Marquez is supposed to be the ace of this roster and has looked anything but.
Kyle Freeland has paid big money for, especially for a pitcher here. He's had one good outing. One.
And really, you could extrapolate that to, and I don't even want to say it, but
the last 3 years.
Well, I was going to say, it's really one good year.
Yeah. So, I mean, he got a big contract for, I don't know why.
The timing of that was even more bizarre than the contract itself for me.
Yeah, it was very odd. I thought, though, that part of the reason why you couldn't let pitchers stay in when, you know, they were rolling and they had a 3-1 lead through seven innings was because, you know, they had that shortened spring training. So we got to let them get used to, you know, kind of being out there. And that was going to prevent all injuries. And then here we are having a pitcher 2 innings into the game in mid-May, 6 weeks into the season, his back is locking up and he's getting tightness. So I guess that babying him and putting him in bubble wrap didn't actually work. Huh. Maybe old curmudgeon guy was onto something.
Chris Bryant has a back thing too. He is going to play for the Isotopes tonight, it sounds like.
All right.
He's going to play for Albuquerque tonight.
Sign.
They're in Salt Lake to play the Salt Lake Bees. So I'm expecting the attendance to be pretty good in Salt Lake tonight. Get to see Chris Bryant.
Yeah, that's a good draw for Salt Lake.
It's a good draw for Salt Lake for the Bees. He is expected, if he passes all the tests that they have set up for him, he'll be rejoining the club on Friday for the start of the Mets series.
Okay, so a bit of good news on the injury front.
A bit, yeah.
Not that he was playing great before he got hurt, but you're better off when your highest paid player is active and on the roster by default.
It's a good start.
So that would be good. But yeah, the Senzatella thing, very disappointing. Chad Kuhl's been their best pitcher. I think Senzatella's probably been their second best starter, which is not saying much.
No.
So somebody had to get the silver medal in that group. So that's not good. Again, in the injury thing, it's stuff like this that just infuriates me, though. Like, it's an avoidable. It's tightness in your back. What are you doing to not be prepared and to have yourself ready to go to where these kind of things are happening? If a pitcher gets hurt trying to leg one out from first to third, doing something he's not used to doing, okay, that's kind of fluky. You know, obviously if he gets a liner back up up the middle and it hits him, or he gets hit by a pitch or something like that, like, I get it. I understand it. Injuries happen, but these kind of things seem super avoidable. And really about preparation on the part of the player to begin with and the training staff beyond that. And part of it, I think, is on the manager of making sure, hey, do we come out of spring training ready to go? Do we push guys the right amount as the season goes on so they're ready to go? Something is amiss because I just don't think on a relatively nice day. I mean, it was beautiful last night. Your back is tightening up between the second and third inning and you can't go. That begs a question as to why. It's weird to me. It's weird.
Will the Rockies poke their head back above 500 at any point in this season?
No, because first of all, they play two more games against the Giants. They would have to win both of those to move above 500 because they're a game below now.
Versus a team that they've lost 11 straight now.
Right. So even if they split, then they'd be right where they are now, a game below 500. And then they host the Mets, arguably the best team in the National League. So I don't expect that series to go very well. They could be 5 or 6 games below 500 by the time Monday rolls around.
That could happen.
That could
absolutely happen.
I'm not predicting it. I think they'll win a game. They'll probably get one of the two against the Giants and probably get one against the Mets and kind of hover around 500. But I don't think they're going to get above it the rest of the year. I don't. And this thing could unravel quickly now.
It could. It could. People are still going to go to Coors Field, though. Let me give you a little stat here from this past week. Okay. In the 3-game set against the Giants in the Bay Area, which was last, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there was 63,000 total fans walk through the gates.
All right.
In 3 games.
So 21,000 a night.
Yep. That's literally what it was. It was 20, 21, 22. This past weekend against Kansas City, in 3 games, over 100,000 people went through the gates of Coors Field.
That's part of the problem. I'm not telling anybody what to do. And you know what? You and I have had this conversation before because we're at different phases in life. And where I'm at, it's easy for me to take a stand and say, I'm not going down there. But you've got a young son, and you know, a lot of people do. And I was in that phase, you know, fairly recently, and I wasn't going to deprive myself of the chance to go down and hang out at Coors Field and watch a baseball game and the generational thing of where I've done it with at Coors Field with my grandfather, my dad, now with my kids. Like, that's cool. Like, just because the Rockies stink and I don't like Dick Monfort and some of the decisions he makes.
Not going to deprive your
right.
kids. From,
ooh, I'm not hurting him. I'm hurting myself and I'm hurting my kids and the memories. But now it's easier for me to take that stand of like, no, I got other things to do. I'll go to my kids' games and we'll do other stuff and I'm not going to go support it. But part of the reason they continue to be the same old Rockies year after year after year, when you get 100,000 people come through the stands for the Royals stink.
That was a 3-game set.
And I get it that Kansas City's close to here.
Yeah, but that ain't it.
No, and you know, when we didn't have a team here, there were a lot of Cubs fans, a lot of Cardinals fans, and a lot of Royals fans. So if you go in the Wayback Machine, maybe there's some allegiance, but that's been 30 years ago.
Dude, I'm going back to the most recent home game. It was during the week, okay? It was when the Nats were here, the Nationals. Thursday, May 5th, over 30,000 people.
For a Nationals team that's not any good.
No, on a weekday.
So, yeah, I mean, when you're bringing in people like that and you're, you know, you're making millions. And the Rockies, for the most part in recent years, have spent commensurate with where they're at in terms of market size.
Yeah, they have. They have spent just in the wrong places.
Right. To call them cheap would be
that would be
unfair.
Yeah, agreed.
To say they spend unwisely would be completely fair.
Exactly right.
And so I feel like continuing to go down there and support them. The only protest you can have two. Don't watch the games on TV.
But here's the thing,
eventually,
James.
That hurts them.
But here's the thing. Not enough people care. Not enough people care to, like, take a stance. They don't. Dante is 24. You're 24 years old. Have you been to Coors Field yet?
I went on Friday.
There you go. It's just like, this is a transplant town. There's a 500,000 people in Lodo who they're going to find a way to get 20,000-30,000 people at contest. Yeah. That's just kind of the order of the world.
He's got a reason to go. He's single. It's a, you know, night out. You go hang out. You go to the bars.
It's fun.
Why on earth would somebody like me go?
Right. No. Well, yeah.
You know, you got kids. You got to get up in the morning and work. I don't want to deal with parking. Oh, the traffic.
The traffic.
My I-25 rant, I can't do it again. You know? So it just depends on what group you're in, what phase of life you're in.
I think I will be there Sunday with my family for the Mets game. Not that I disagree with the things that you said and the dynamics of it. Just for my life right now, I'm just gonna live it.
No, so. And I'm with you, and I think you should. I think it would be silly if you went the other way. But for me, it's just like, man, it would take a lot of motivation. It would have to be
your kids pleading.
No, I think I'm used to telling them no by this point.
Come on, James.
I don't know what it would take to get me to go to a Rockies game. That's like maybe the chance to go watch Ohtani and Trout if I had seats right behind home plate. Yeah. He was pitching.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Like
if I had seats. Yeah, behind home
I would do
plate.
That.
Okay.
I'm not going to sit up in the purple row and watch him.
The greatest hockey player ever to live has made a prediction on the Avalanche in the second round that is just not going to sit right with the folks around here. And we'll fill you in coming up next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
There's got to be room in this world always searching for content for a uncensored podcast that's just a recording of the commercial breaks. Because this is like the fourth time today that we literally are supposed to take a break and then some sort of conversation starts where it's, we're just going, who's the top five players in the NBA? And
pretty random, really.
Or is Russell Wilson, does he need to play another down of football to go to the Hall of Fame? And then you're just like, okay, we got to come back. And it's just like.
That's right. That was off the air, too.
Yes.
But yeah, the conversation came up because I said Jason Tatum is a top five player in the NBA, and most people wouldn't consider him that.
Jason Tatum is emerging into that conversation. I think that as recent as, I don't know, 2.5 months ago, I think in most NBA fans list, he wouldn't be top five. He was just, you know, coming off a game in, what was it, game two or three against the Bucks, where he's like 4 for 15 for 11 points. It's like, dude, where are you?
I don't think in most people's minds he would have been top 10 a month and a half, 2 months ago, which is why I think he's very underrated.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, he would have been top 10 on my list.
Sure, but you're a basketball aficionado. Like, you know the game. You watch the NBA more than just your casual fan. I think he would have been down the list for casual fans. Casual fans would have put Steph and LeBron and KD, no offense, Dante, onto that list ahead of Jason Tatum. I put Jason Tatum ahead of all of those guys at this point. I think that it's Luka, it's Giannis, not in that order. I think it's Embiid. I think it's Tatum. I put Ja Morant up there. If you want to go Jokic, that's fine. He'd be six for me. But I think that's the group. And then you get those veterans kind of still playing at a high level every now and then that would finish out your top 10. But I think Jason Tatum belongs on that list.
Well, he's going to be on everyone's list after this season. Going nuclear in game six. Well, what he did to finish this series is incredible. And he put together an all-NBA season this past year. He was 27 points a game. I mean, really just a coming-of-age season, a coming-of-age series for Tatum. We'll see how it shakes out. I have him, mentioned this earlier in the broadcast, I have him under 27.5 points tonight. Just think the dynamics at play after a 7-game series, and he has struggled against Miami this year, averaging just over 17 points a game, 29% from three against a really good defensive team in Miami. So I actually have the Celtics winning the series, but I think they lose tonight, and I'm going Tatum under 27.5.
After saying all of that, I'm with you on the under 27.5. Tonight just doesn't feel like the night for Boston and for him. But I do think he's a great, great player. You guys are way down on Ja Morant. That would be the great part of that podcast.
I'm not way down on Ja Morant.
I just hear what the record was when he didn't play.
Well, isn't that worth mentioning?
All this
like
nonsense.
Your team can be like 23-4 without a top five player.
Yeah, but you put a guy in there who's 1-8 in his last 9 playoff games.
Oh, dude, the Jokic slander. All right, we got to move on here. We're just a couple hours away of really, and I think this is fair, like we have waited a year for this.
Yeah.
We've waited a year to get to not just the postseason, but the second round in particular. And here we are. We're on the doorstep of it. I am so excited. I am going to be at the game tonight. If you see me in section 208, holler at your boy. I am super excited. But going into the last break, I said the greatest player to ever live and arguably the greatest, you know, at his particular sport of all the major four pro sports in here in America anyway. By the way, did I see that Messi's coming to the MLS?
He was denying the rumor, but that's the story. He was buying a big chunk of the Miami team.
Yeah, like 35% of the Miami team.
And they're going to play for the team.
Yeah, joining the team. Anyway, you could argue that Wayne Gretzky at his sport was the most dominant at his sport. His nickname, literally the great one, where you could, in the most literal sense, remove every goal that he ever scored and he'd still be number one on the all-time points list. It's remarkable. But his acumen in picking these series has been just as remarkable, where you have, in the first round, five series that went all 7 games. Wayne Gretzky has picked every single series right to date. That's fine. But the concerning thing is he sees something that has him picking the Blues over the Avalanche here in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds great to go 8-for-8, but really, what was the hard one? The Lightning over Toronto? Wow, you picked the back-to-back defending Stanley Cup champs to pull an upset in the first round? Really venturing out on a limb there, Wayne. I mean,
I just you're minimizing that. If you had that, you'd be screenshotting the 8-legger.
He had Carolina over Boston. Okay, we all saw that coming. Calgary over Dallas, Edmonton over LA. Those were tougher series than we expected. St. Louis over Minnesota, I think, is a pretty good upset. I picked the Wild in that series, so that was an upset, a mild one. I don't think it wasn't like an 8-1, and he called it. I'm just saying that. It's not like he's, you know, heading into the Sweet 16 and he's still got a perfect bracket. It's not on that level. So the fact that he's picking St. Louis to beat the Avs worries me not at all. Zero. The Avs are going to roll through this. The last calendar year has been just window dressing to get to this point. It's just been, hey, we got to go through the process. Regular season, yeah, okay, let's going through the motions, right? They had the best record in the NHL for vast majority of the year to the last 2 weeks when they totally took their foot off the gas. First round was like, okay, we just got to get through it. It all starts now. It all starts tonight. The rest of it was meaningless.
It feels like that.
Get back to where we blew it a year ago when we lost four straight to Vegas and avenge that. If they're not able to do it, nothing they've accomplished in the regular season, nothing they did in the first round against Nashville means anything. It doesn't. It means zilch. So it all starts tonight. The Avs are going to come out. I picked them to win against Nashville in game one, 7-2, and nailed it. It's not going
to
quite.
You predicted 7-2?
Uh-huh. On the money.
Because I predicted on the air 7-3, and I thought I was closest to the pin on that one.
I know. You were taking your victory lap. It's like, I got the coffee break footage. I'll send to you. But it's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it. I don't think it's going to be quite that tonight, but I think it's going to be close. I think they win 6-2 tonight.
Really?
Yeah. I think they come out and just come at St. Louis in waves, and it's going to be like it was against Nashville where you look up, it's like, wow, there's 16 and a half minutes to go in the first period, and they're already on the board. I think it's going to be
that was the. By the way, that was one of the coolest experiences that I've ever had as a sports fan, was the first 5 minutes of Avalanche-Nashville game one. I will remember it for the rest of my life. And by the way, and this is one of the reasons I'm so excited for tonight, is that being at game one and game two of the first round, I'm not saying that game two's energy was bad, because stand alone unto itself, it was awesome. Compared to game one, wasn't really close.
No,
game,
I'm with you.
Game one, because of the natural factors that most of the people in the building for game two were in the building for game one. You're watching the hype video for the second time. The newness. Again, not saying that the vibe was bad. It was great. But contrasted to game one, like one of the most energetic lit atmospheres I've ever been a part of. That's why I'm so much looking forward to tonight, because I think it's going to be even doubly so.
Well, and part of that energy is nervous energy.
Yeah.
Right? So it's hard to be nervous heading into game two when you just won 7-2. Game one, you're still in that kind of like, oh, man, anything could happen, right? And so a lot of it is nervous energy. That will be there tonight. It'll be more than it was in round one. Like, you know, I think first playoff game, and there's always a little bit of that, but nobody expected Nashville to give them a test at all.
Right.
You know, St. Louis, they swept them a year ago, but they won the Cup 3 years ago. Bennington's playing well, and here we are in the second round. They could be playing anybody, and there would be a little bit of apprehension heading into the second round.
I agree.
Just based on what's happened.
I agree.
So I think tonight, if you compare tonight versus game one against Nashville, tonight's going to be an even higher level.
It's
going to be
crazy. Wait.
Get to your seats early, though. And make sure you're there, because the Avs are going to score early and they're going to score often. That thing was over. Wasn't it 4-0 in the first period?
It was 5-0.
5-0. Okay. And that's right.
And I was sitting there because I had the over 2 and it was 6. Right. And I'm like, wait, we got 2 periods to figure this thing out, fellas.
Right. And I think Nashville had 6 shots and the Avs had 5 goals in the first period of game one. It's not going to be quite that in terms of the buzzsaw, but it's going to be similar, at least early. I think the Avs score pretty quick. I think they get the 2-0 lead relatively quickly. I think they cruise tonight, win 6-2. And the great one, with all due respect, and you're right, he is arguably the greatest professional athlete in any sport. He's going to be off and way off when it comes to this series.
This is KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. We want to thank our listener, Brandon Stokely, for making 104.3 The Fan a part of his day.
Did he work that in? He did. You know, the last 6 or 7 times I've been on, whether it's with you, whether it's with Stoke, I just haven't even been thinking it. Off my game.
Get your mind right.
Got to get one of those t-shirts.
Man, here we freaking go. Darcy Kuemper, back between the pipes, dodged a bullet, you know, really considering what could have been.
Yeah.
Nazem Kadri. The history is so real, and for it to be against the Blues, Justin Falk?
Yep.
The defenseman that he hit a year ago, he gets the 8 games in the first minute in their first matchup, had to drop the gloves. In the first minute of the second matchup, had to drop the gloves. I don't think we see it tonight, but I think that from a multiple layered standpoint with Kadri, because this is a contract year for him as well, he can't screw this up. And if for some reason a far-out universe he did, there's no Players Tribune article that's going to save him. All right? Let your actions do the talking. You had a career year. You were a missing component in that round against the Knights.
They need him. The Avs, if you're ever going to do it, you mentioned this earlier in the show. If you're ever going to do it, you have a loaded team. You're a 4-1 favorite. Everyone's healthy. Go figure it out.
Yeah, if you can't get out of the second round, really, if you can't get to the Stanley Cup Finals, and to some extent, if you can't win the Cup this year with this roster, fully healthy, home ice advantage, unless you play, what, Florida in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Not worried about Florida. I just saw Florida struggle mightily with the Capitals.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you can't do it this year, when can you? There will be significant changes depending on how short of that they fall. If they don't get out of this round, there will be major, major changes. And there should be, but it's you don't need to worry about it. They're going to win in five. It's going to be a gentleman's sweep. We'll have to hear Gloria one time in St. Louis.
I think they stopped playing it.
Did they?
I think they did.
Why?
I don't know.
Because it's stupid.
But I no, it's all, I love that song.
Laura Branigan, 1982. Gosh.
Love
it. Classic.
Love it.
Classic
it,
for who?
Huge hit.
I get it, but not a good song.
It is a well, that's a totally opinion based thing.
Okay.
You know, I like this song, you don't, so it's bad. So this song sucks.
Oh, come on. That song comes on.
I love it.
It's hard to not start feeling a little.
It's like a jukebox song. Yeah. It's a jukebox song.
Totally.
Oh, my God.
Our friend D-Mac, I hope you've been feeling the love.
Oh, yeah. It's overwhelming. I'm feeling the love. So the love has been felt and greatly and deeply appreciated. You know, I did talk to I asked Justin Falk today about Kadri. He was there with Ryan O'Reilly. He's a good player. That's Kadri. He's a two-way player. He's a good player. Just
mm-hmm.
And then he was asked by my guy Jesse from DNVR, is all that settled? Yeah. But I wonder how much they're lying there. I wonder how much that, because they've played each other quite a few times.
They did. Well, and Falk actually fought Nazem Kadri. In fact, if you go back and watch it, Kadri falls down on a play and is literally down on the ground. Falk already has his gloves off and is waiting for Kadri to stand back up to fight him.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube. You can watch it, take you a minute. But I don't think it's going to be a factor unless one of these games gets out of hand and the frustration seeps in, whether it's out of hand for the series or a particular game that's already been decided. I think you could see some nonsense rear its ugly head.
It's not really the Blues game, though. That's really not who they are. They're kind of just this wildly deep scoring machine, you know, because they got nine guys who have 20 goals.
Which is stunning. Well, that stat is crazy.
They got a little pinch of a goalie controversy, a little bit of one.
And if they watched the Predator series against the Avs, they had to come away with it going, well, we can't take penalties. Like if we're shorthanded,
right,
we're dead, right? So they can't go out there and try to play that style and put themselves at a disadvantage. So you think there's a goaltender controversy?
That's just going to be Bennington? It's going to be, but he didn't start the series last series.
Right.
And so he got put in and he did great. But it's not like he was the guy going into their first-round series.
I mentioned this before to James. I actually don't like the dynamic at play here because you're right. He had been struggling. He got replaced by Husso, mm-hmm. and then he's struggling. They put Bennington back in,
yeah.
And then all he did is go 3-0 and stop 83 of 88 shots. He's not coming in with a lack of confidence. He's like, I'm back. Like
right,
this guy
true.
Won a cup his rookie year. The last time there was a straight up season, the way that you laid out earlier, James, of like the normalcy of non bubble, the fans, they were hoisting the cup and he was a rookie and had it over his head. I'm not saying I'm scared or anything like that because James. You're not very good at asking me questions, so I'll ask myself in terms of the game prediction.
Zing.
Would you have it at 6-2?
I had it at 6-2. Yeah, I had the Avs winning in five. What do you have, Zach? What are you thinking tonight?
You know what? I'm so glad you asked, my friend.
I can learn.
I got the same score as game one last round, 7-2.
Whoa.
7-2, and I got the Avs in five. I think the Blues have one of these games in them, and you're going to see a more dominant team that if you had both teams put all their players together in a big pool and GMs were picking, I think the Avs would get 8 of the top 10 picks of players in this series.
Hey, by the way, with the Stokely room down, how's this work? We just got to get another microphone in here somehow.
He just is kind of lurking behind you.
He's just a 6'7 guy right over your shoulder.
Don't mind him.
6'7".
6'8", tallest player in Broncos history.
No. That's gone too.
Tied though, right?
No.
DeMar Dotson.
Yeah.
The basketball shoe wearing tackle. You remember that story? He didn't have cleats. He's a basketball player.
So we gotta wait. We gotta kick somebody out, or how does this work?
Well,
or,
I'm not asking questions properly, so I can certainly bolt. You know, and Zach, you can stay here.
Please
hang out, continue the conversation.
James, why don't you get the hell out of here?
I enjoyed it though; it was fun.
Dude, I'll be
back on Thursday.
We'll do it again.
Yes.
All right, and we'll be previewing game two on Thursday as well.
James leaves. Tyler can sit down. You don't have to leave right away. James has to get. What a weird situation we have here.
Dude,
this is odd. To say
it was always odd. Now it's just
we're
to
in a
multiple
weird situation here.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, I was just wondering if James is ever going to get a clue. Like, how long do I have to hover?
Read the room, bro.
You know, when do you understand that you're no longer welcome?
Oh my gosh!
For the love,
D-Mac, you know what I've been saying here behind the scenes, like just to our guys.
What's that?
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off because it's going to take a lot, both financially and from my wife. That I think I'm going to try to pull a miniature D-Mac.
How so?
Or a microwaved D-Mac.
All right. Give it to me.
You were at every single game during the regular season.
Yeah.
I am going to try.
How are you
going to
do it?
Spend a lot of money and ask for a lot of favors from my wife.
I mean, do you have tickets tonight?
I do have tickets tonight.
Okay.
So you feel...
So it's funny because I asked you if you were going to go, as in like, hey, do you want to go together?
And what did I say?
You said that you think you're going to go, but reaching back out and being like, hey, buddy, here's where I'm going to get the tickets. Would you like to go together?
So I could understand why you would say that.
Yeah.
At the time,
I invite you to golf. Now I invite you to hockey. You know what? Hey, first time, you know it's on you. Second time it's on me. Third time, you know what? There is no third time.
We can get you guys counseling if you need
it. No, look, at the time I didn't know. I just got my ticket today.
Ticket? Like you're going by yourself?
I am not going by myself.
Oh. But you're not going with Tyler.
I got it.
I am sitting section 208 in the first row. My wife is letting it, you know, making it happen. I'm scratching her back. She's scratching mine.
You know, Zach, thanks to our listeners in Golden for making 104.3 the Fan part of their day. Keep going, though. I want to.
Golden knows.
Yes, they do.
So you're
trying to go to every single playoff game.
We'll see how it all shakes out. But yes, that's the goal right now. I got the same exact clothes I wore for game one and game two. Going to wear them tonight. I haven't cut my hair because I can't grow a beard. And we'll see how it all
shakes
out.
Can you not grow a beard? Are you serious on that?
I get this little Mexican stash from my grandpa Ortiz, and that's about it.
You should do that. I mean, that would be fantastic.
Oh, just go full stash.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Kale McCarr can't grow anything either, by the way. And he did say he's trying, and it's a joke, because he cannot grow a darn thing.
He's got that peach fuzz. I just saw him this past week.
Right. It's ridiculous. I have never seen you with. I guess I haven't thought of that.
I can see the shade from the mustache.
Dude,
you might be able to grow a pretty decent one there.
It is. I'm telling you, it's ratty.
Yeah,
grow it, man.
It's perfect.
Bring on the playoff stash.
Perfect.
Yes.
That would be great.
You know,
I mean, hold on. Are you confusing yourself with a good looking man? Anyways, like, do you think this is going to affect things?
Did you hear Kendrick Perkins say that to Draymond Green this past week?
No, yes. Or you called him cute or something.
He's like, you think you're handsome?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you better thank that logo that you can get a girl. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I am here for the Draymond Green Kendrick Perkins beef.
All right, so why do you feel this passion to go to games now? What is it about going to the games that's got you so fired up?
I shared a little bit with you last week. I'm just letting myself, you know, just get caught up in it. I've followed the team now for 5 years and now into year six.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up a Sabres fan. Outside of, you know, Patrick Waugh and Joe Sakic, I probably couldn't tell you anything about the Avalanche moving out here.
Yep.
So it's just sort of like slowly, organically taken over. I had never been to a playoff game before. Haven't watched a Sabres game in 10 years, at least. Yeah, they're one of the worst run teams in the league. So it's just kind of happening, man. I'm here. I live here. I've been living here for a half a decade now plus, and I'm just like, this is awesome. It was one of the coolest sporting events I've been to, and I just gonna let myself
playoff hockey,
rare.
Man.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad. I mean, bad in a good way.
Yeah.
Do you see a time where you would invite Tyler to go with you?
Dude, I would love nothing more than to go to a Avs playoff game with you.
Well, it's weird because like I literally texted you asking if you wanted to do that. So, you know, just,
Tyler.
I mean, it's okay. You
Tyler,
know, it's okay. I understand.
I
understand.
The guy who was buying the tickets, Matt Smith.
Yeah.
I texted him yesterday. I said, "Is Tyler coming?" That was my question. Like, is Tyler coming?
Well, you didn't text me.
Wait. Is that Matt with one T Smith?
Yeah, that's Matt with one T.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I can't. You guys figure it out.
I can't wait. But hey, seriously.
Seriously.
Would you like to go to game two?
I would love to.
I'm formally asking you on a date.
Yes.
Mandate.
Wait, are you paying at all?
Am I what?
Are you paying at all?
Am I paying?
Have you seen the secondary market?
Hey,
what have you seen?
Well, yeah, I mean, you asked me on a date.
Tyler, what's the puck line tonight? They'll tell you if he's paying or not. Yeah, well, How are you feeling about this game?
I know the over-under 6.5, right?
So I like
you're taking the over, huh?
Yeah.
I'm taking the under. I am.
Are you really?
You got some time off. Both teams are off.
Okay.
I feel like both goaltenders are playing really well right now. I just feel like with the time off, probably not going to be fireworks tonight.
Oof.
Hey, we'll see.
I think the more energy will come from tonight because they're so well rested. But I think that number is spot on, man. And like 5-2 Avs or maybe 6-2 Avs or like I don't think it's going to be close. I think they're gonna be fine. But if it's 5-0, you're in big trouble, right? Like 5-0 is a complete blowout, but they're not going to get the number.
In the last three games of the series against the Wild, from St. Louis, 5 goals. 5 goals.
Yeah. Right.
I can't see the Avs scoring less than 5 goals.
Yeah.
So you need two from St. Louis.
You need two from St. Louis.
Yeah.
They got 9 guys who scored 20 or more goals this season.
Isn't that a stat? That is such a stat.
Good one. All right. Well, Zach, have fun. Where are you again? Are you now?
208.
208?
Well, nice.
Me and Rachel will wave at you.
Cool.
We're way up. You should not be jealous of the media seating for the playoff games. It's ridiculous.
I've seen it.
No, it's not good.
Well, I kind of see. I squint.
All right. Well, we'll roll on and talk to Ryan O'Reilly and Justin Falk and you know, Jared Bednar is sick of everything. You know, he's ready to go. We'll preview the series coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.